You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. Welcome into First Take. Thank you guys for being with us. Stephen A. Smith. Max Kellerman, I'm Molly Karam-Rose. Gentlemen, Aaron Rodgers has spoken, appearing on SportsCenter to commemorate Kenny Mayne's final show on ESPN and his first public explanation for how the standoff between him and the Packers reached this point. The reigning MVP suggested his issue with the team is how they handled the selection of Jordan Love, not with Love himself.
Yeah, with my situation, look, it's never been about, never been about the draft pick, picking Jordan. I love Jordan. He's a great kid. A lot of fun to work together. I love the coaching staff, love my teammates, I love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy, and maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way.
Is it just me, or does Rodgers look so relaxed, just living his best life? Here's a look at some key dates regarding his contract. The dead money cap charge drops nearly in a half. If he's traded after June 1st, he could get fined over $90,000 for missing mandatory minicamp. Green Bay can fine him $50,000 for each day of training camp. And Gutekunst has admitted that he should have communicated better with Rodgers before he traded up to take Love at number 26 in the 2020 draft. Stephen A., is there anything that Green Bay can do at this point to change Aaron Rodgers' mind?
I don't believe so. I mean, I'll leave myself open to being corrected about the possibilities, and we'll get into Julio Jones and others later, and we'll do all of that. But I'll leave myself open to that possibility. But my mentality is no, because let's understand what Aaron Rodgers is saying. He's talking about, from a cultural perspective, he doesn't like what he's seeing from the organization. Now, let's take this thing into consideration. Right now, this is the reigning league MVP. I believe it's his third league MVP award. I believe the record that he has as the starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers is 126-63-1. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's taken them to the conference championship game at least four times, at least four or five times. This guy has been universally recognized as arguably the greatest talent we've ever seen at the quarterback position. And for the better part of a decade, this man has carried the franchise on his back. You got rid of Jordy Nelson against his wishes. You fired his quarterbacks coach, Alex Van Pelt, a few years back after they finished 7-9 without consulting him. You've made a plethora of decisions without consulting him. He comes to you and talks to you, and you basically tell him, shut the hell up and go play football. You play football, we run this organization. This is how you treat a star. This is how you treat a star in Green Bay if you're Mark Murphy. This is how you treat a star in Green Bay if you're Mr. Gutekunst. This is how you treat a star in Green Bay if you're the coach, Matt LaFleur, which basically is not really his fault because he just got there and he's got to coincide with the organization. But damn it, you didn't have to take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands at the in the fourth quarter on a fourth down when Tom Brady's standing on the other side of the field. All things are not created equal. And when you have a star that delivers the goods like he did, you don't summarily dismiss him and ignore his wishes. You know why? Because that is a powder keg waiting to explode. At some point in time, this man ain't gonna be as passive aggressive. He gonna get like Stephen A. And he gonna sit up there
aggressive,
and speak
aggressive.
Out. Oh, very, very damn aggressive. And he's gonna say, to hell with this. Enough's enough. I'm not taking it anymore. And everybody gonna be put on notice. That's what, he ain't done that yet. He still got that step to do. He hasn't done that yet. Look out. Let them keep messing with him. You better let him go.
First of all, I like the fact that Aaron Rodgers showed up for Kenny Mayne, one of the best who ever did it.
On his final SportsCenter.
Yep, yes. Let me say this. What Gutekunst has to do, because I disagree with you, Stephen A., I think they can salvage it. What Gutekunst has to do is show up and, in the words of Happy Gilmore to Chubbs, I was wrong, you were right. I'm stupid, you're smart. You're the best, I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not very attractive. He has to do the Happy Gilmore. Like, not just be like, yeah, maybe I could have done better. No, Gutekunst. No. Gutekunst is a good GM. He's a good GM, period. He constructed a good team. But now is the time where he has to humble himself and with real humility go to Aaron Rodgers, hat in hand, well, excuse me, hat in one hand, contract in the other, and say, here's my hat, I'll eat it, and here's the contract that makes you the highest paid quarterback guaranteed money ever. I hope you sign it. And if he does that, I think if Rodgers surveys the landscape, he'll see, take every quarterback off every team. Packers give him one of the best chances to win in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's the team he's played for his entire career. And Stephen A., if his problem is the culture, the attitude they have, then address it, correct it, and hope that he comes on board. Because I think that has a shot to work.
But you do get to a point where you can't correct the culture. At some point in time, you are who you are. No matter what you try, whatever, no matter what modifications you try to implement into the proceedings, no matter what crumbs you try to throw into the equation to give the impression that you've changed, you are what you are. And you know when you find out who people really are? When they have the power. See, Gutekunst was in control, and Aaron Rodgers wasn't saying much at all. He marched along, he got his contract, he went out on the field, he strived to perform. And while you knew he was doing that, what did you do? You took him for granted. Did you listen to him when he was quiet, even though he came to you privately? No. Did you heed his words? Did you pay attention to him? Did you take heed to the fact that, yo, the brother ain't happy? And this is the man for this franchise. We in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Greek Freak's about an hour and 15 minutes away, if I remember correctly. This ain't basketball. This is football town. This is the town that Lombardi built. You understand what I'm saying? It's winning or nothing. Winning is everything. Okay, Aaron Rodgers comes, succeeding Brett Favre, by the way, shows up and basically makes you just sit up there and look at Brett Favre like, we appreciate what you did, but a new era has arrived. Because he's that elite. That's what Aaron Rodgers brought to the table. And while all of that's going on, and he's producing for you, you sit up there and you summarily dismiss him, there does come a point, Max, where you sit up there and you don't give a damn what they say. Well, because guess what? You have been ignored for far
one of the
too
things that,
long.
That's one of the things that Gutekunst needs to address directly with Rodgers. Because what you just said, the Packers way, they'll get rid of Brett Favre. Brett Favre still had football left. He was still really good. They were like, oh,
no,
Rodgers.
Don't compare the two. That wasn't a talent issue with Brett Favre.
It was the issue with Brett Favre is he was getting old. How many more years could he
no,
be?
Max.
Hold
no,
on.
Go ahead.
And
but that's not
guy,
that's
And
not
we
true.
Have a guy waiting in the wings.
But that's not true.
What's not true?
Brett Favre kept saying he wanted to retire. They were like this, damn, make up your mind.
But he could still really play. They just had a guy waiting in the wings.
But they would say.
The same.
It's Max, traditionally, it's football.
Traditionally in the NFL, Joe Montana doesn't end up a 49er. It doesn't matter how great
Max.
You are. You could wind up on another team when they don't
Max.
Think you have horizons
Max.
That are very long.
Brett Favre is one of the greats.
Yeah.
We understand that. Tell me one person in the history of the National Football League at the quarterback position who alluded year after year after year to wanting to retire more than Brett Favre.
But was that after they got Aaron Rodgers? That I don't remember the details. Was it after they got Aaron Rodgers that he said he wanted to retire or before? And then they brought Aaron Rodgers.
They drafted Rodgers in the first round of 2005.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is after that, Brett Favre, because he had absorbed so much punishment, Molly, he had spent season after season every year.
Yes, I remember that. I was at NFL Network.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know if I want to play.
The point is, that's a side point.
That's not the same.
My point is, good football organizations are always looking for the future, and they treat the players really largely like commodities, and it's always been that way. The culture has changed. Gutekunst didn't seem to be aware of the power that a truly great quarterback has in this NFL. That's what he has to communicate to Rodgers. So I was wrong. The old way doesn't work anymore.
Well, listen. Here's where I disagree with you. Tell me at any time. I mean, because all of us, I'm 53. You're in your late 40s, okay? I'm not going to ask a lady her
age. I'm in my 30s still.
Okay, here's the deal. It doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. Culture is culture when it comes to individuals in this regard. If somebody produces for you and somebody performs exceedingly well for you, they're not equal. And when you treat
them
like that, exactly. Yeah. When you treat them like they're just another cog in the wheel,
but
then all of a sudden you're going to have a problem.
What I'm saying is that may be true, and we all watched as they never drafted him in first round target and all that stuff. The bottom line is if you have Rodgers, he's able to compensate for that. You can build a well-rounded team. Gutekunst has done that. My point is in the NFL, Peyton Manning, see you later, you got hurt, now we have Andrew Luck. Joe Montana, see you later, we got Steve Young. Brett Favre, see you later, we got Aaron Rodgers. And they were, by the way, Belichick did it to Brady. We have Jimmy Garoppolo, see you later.
So are you calling Aaron Rodgers a liar?
What I'm saying is...
I'm still trying to figure that out.
What I'm saying is they were preparing. They were fixing to do the same thing to Rodgers.
And he's saying...
And Rodgers flipped it on him and said, no. Yeah. You're not going to do that to me.
He's saying that philosophy doesn't work, and that's his issue. What did you say? Milwaukee's about an hour 15?
Hour 15.
Okay, let's go there now. To the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks destroyed Miami in Game 2 after going to OT in Game 1. I'm talking a 34-point beatdown. Giannis put up 31, 13-6. As for Jimmy Butler, he wasn't looking like Jimmy Buckets last night. Take a listen.
I don't think nobody's embarrassed. I think that's just part of the game. They just whooped that tail. They did. But, you know, you put this behind us. We got 2 days to get ready for this next one. I mean, I think you kind of got to just leave it at that. I don't think, you know, frustration is going to change anything. I think you just got to compete a lot harder, do things the right way. But all in all, we realize we lost this game together. We went down. We are down 0-2. We're down 0-2 together. Whenever we get home, we're going to be together whenever we play game 3.
That chain, though, really would complete my look. Stephen A., is Butler to blame for the game 2 blowout?
I'm going to blame him for it because I'm not talking about him just as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about him as a leader. Enough's enough of this nonsense. Let me tell you something about Jimmy Butler. This brother is as real and authentic as it gets. He's a rough rider.
Yeah.
He's a star in this league, okay? I believe in him. I believe if the Philadelphia 76ers had Jimmy Butler, they might win the championship. That's how I feel
this
about
year.
It. No, I'm talking about last year.
Yeah,
you know, and the previous 2 years. You know, he left. When they lost in Game 7 to Toronto, I think if they had come back last year, I think they could have made some real, real noise with Jimmy Butler. I believe in this brother, okay? And we saw what we saw from him in the playoffs, particularly in the NBA Finals. He shot 4 for 22 in Game 1. He shot 4 for 10 last night. And Jimmy Butler's, it has to stop. This is Jimmy Butler. Numbers don't matter. You know, at the end of the day, it's about winning. I appreciate that because, remember, with Russell Westbrook, I took the opposite point of view. The numbers, you know, a similar point of view. The numbers don't necessarily matter because I know you could do that already. Now you got to be winning instead of going home in the first round. In the case of Jimmy Butler, yo, bro, you the star. You the face of the franchise. You the face of the franchise. Enough of this, okay? This is the franchise that Zoe and Shaq and D-Wade and LeBron and those cats were at. You the new standard. And the reality of the situation is that Jimmy Butler has to show up and be Jimmy Butler. Enough of this passive stuff. Enough of this fitting in. You a star, okay? You might not be a superstar because, like I said, there's levels to this LeBron and guys like that on another level, but damn it, you showed, especially in the NBA Finals, that you're on an elevated level when you want to be. You got to want to be every night come playoffs. Enough of this 4 for 22 shooting or 4 for 10 and finishing with 10 points and we just trying to get things right. You Jimmy freaking Butler. Enough's enough. Stop playing. Because damn it, you know me, Max.
He wants to go to Miami.
There we go.
That's what this is all about.
You know me,
when we were on the call, let me just say one thing I want to get to you. We're on the call.
That's
he's
right.
Like, I want to talk about Jimmy Butler. I knew it right away. I knew you so well because you got to fire him up because you want to be in South Beach. This is about you.
I appreciate the fact that you know me so well,
Molly. I do.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm very flattered. Bottom line is, I mean it. I ain't playing.
Oh, my God.
Enough's enough.
You better pack your bags.
Handle your business.
He's not trying to fire up any other squad.
You're going
Miami.
From
I mean, come on.
Here in New York with the Nets to either Philly or Milwaukee. So yeah, make your travel plans.
I understand. I understand. But let it be because they beat you, not because you walking around. I'm just trying
to tell you who to blame.
You ain't fit.
When
you
he does
Jimmy
call
Butler.
People out at work
take
sometimes,
over.
I got to give him that.
Take over.
Let me tell you who to blame.
Okay.
Okay? Because you're looking for someone to blame in case you don't go to Miami. And it's not Jimmy Butler, although I can't disagree with your point, basically. Butler's got to play better than that. I'm sure he knows.
Yes,
the
he
heart
knows.
And soul
he
of the
knows.
Team.
He knows.
But Jimmy Butler can't guard everyone. Brent Forbes can't miss from the outside. All the shooters are hot. He can't guard everyone. He can't be everywhere. But you know who does make decisions if you're looking for someone to blame? Eric Spoelstra. Now, what? Eric Spoelstra makes decisions like burying Tyler Hero on the bench. Remember what Tyler Hero did in the playoffs last year? He was a superstar. Now, I understand Kendrick Nunn is starting with, and then Dragic, he's the third stringer. Hero's playing 10 minutes. He didn't play very well, but 10 minutes? How are you going to get a rhythm in 10 minutes either? This dude can take you there. I think Spoelstra, who is known for in-series adjustments, Stephen A., may wind up being your best friend, or at least trying to be. Because what is the issue going into this series? The Bucks are better. The Bucks are a better team than the Heat. They're supposed to win. But the issue going in was Budenholzer. Budenholzer in Atlanta won 60 games, flamed out in the playoffs. Then he gets to Milwaukee. Well, in Atlanta, he didn't really have a superstar. Now he's at flamed out in the playoffs. Flamed out in the playoffs again. And you are the one saying, hey, Budenholzer's job can be in jeopardy. He's got to do something in these playoffs. I agree. Well, he's doing something so far. And now it's on Spoelstra, who is a great coach. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. He's won championships. He's excellent. He makes adjustments mid-series. Well, he's going to have to do that. And now let's see what Budenholzer does. Because I expect Spoelstra to adjust. But so far, if you're looking for a villain, it's Spoelstra.
I'm not, I don't consider, well, you know what? I can't say that because when you bring up the point about Tyler Hero, that's a very, very valid point. I believe in Tyler Hero. I think the brother's got game. And when you saw what he did in the postseason, sometimes, again, because to protect the culture, you know, he might have got a big hit. I don't know the story. I haven't asked. But there's something wrong when Tyler Hero's only playing 17 minutes. There's something wrong with that. That picture doesn't seem right at all. And so definitely that's something that needs to be looked into. Trevor Ariza, my brother, I'm a huge fan of Trevor Ariza. 0-3, bro.
Can't throw in the ocean.
Minus 25 from the plus minus 25. Last time we really saw Trevor Ariza in the playoffs, we know when that was, when he was in Houston, you know, and at game 7, and he was like 0-12. I mean, you got to do better. But I'm still going to go back to Jimmy Butler because I believe in him. Here's what stars do. Stars make up for what the rest of the team is lacking to some degree. They make up for it. And especially when it's a place you want it to go. D-Wade vouched for you. Kawhi Leonard might come there because undercover-wise, his relationship with Jimmy Butler is pretty damn good. Here's the reality of the situation. You the man there right now. Bam Adebayo, we love and appreciate him. We appreciate the years of service for Andre Iguodala, and we know he has a role on any championship team, okay? We look at some of the pieces like the Kendrick Nunns, the Tyler Heroes of the world. We know they could play. Damn it, Jimmy Butler, they ain't you. You Jimmy freaking Butler. Take over. Stop with the passiveness. It's yours. It's yours. You missed the South Beach. Now, they ain't going to call it Wade County because Wade County is reserved for a very, very special man who now happens to be the part owner of the Utah Jazz, which is another story for another day. But the bottom line is, it's your town. Take over. Period. Number one option.
You're
no Jim, passiveness.
That was a great motivation speech. Thank
your
you for
Jimmy
that.
Freaking Butler is going to be a meme or a gif or a gif or whatever the kids are calling it nowadays. I can't argue with that point. Mm-hmm. If Kawhi, for example, doesn't do anything with the Clippers, then I'll bet you, but this is why what you're saying about Butler is right on. If they don't do anything, I'm sure Kawhi is going to look at Paul George a little sideways and think, I moved mountains to get you here and you didn't show up in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons he might want to go to Miami is not just Spoelstra and the culture, but you have a crime partner like Butler who shows up in big moments. He can't afford not to show up in the big moment.
Second largest playoff loss in franchise history. Can we just take a moment? Because he complimented your basketball analysis. So I just want to just take a moment and just all marinate on that.
I have my card back.
There's a first for everything.
You don't. You'll never get your card back. But you're allowed a guest pass.
He has to be careful. I could beat you without a card.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Today marks the one-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder. Last night, the NBA Social Justice Coalition called on the U.S. Senate to pass the George Floyd Justice Act in policing as a way to honor Floyd and others who have been victims of police brutality. The act would ban chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement while creating national standards for policing to bolster accountability. The bill already has been passed in the U.S. House. The death of George Floyd in the video that showed convicted Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes became a catalyst in the sports world for racial and social justice. Here's reaction around athletics.
I'm hurt. I'm angry. Think it's about time that I take a stand. Why they wanna hold me down? But I ain't scared.
Black lives have always mattered. They matter then, they matter now, and they will matter in the future.
We believe that Black Lives Matter, and we need to be the role models to go out there and take that step.
It sounds like there's nobody to sit together. Love my people who be standing strong. Just know you never stand alone. I ain't gonna play with you. Yeah, to my brother and my cousin, I need justice for my loved ones now.
Floyd might not be here, but we're going to get justice for my brother.
Stephen A., what did we learn from activism in the sports world over this past year?
Well, what we've learned is that the modern-day athlete has regained a level of consciousness that people thought were lost along the way. So many times over the years we saw a multitude of athletes that a plethora of people felt should have spoken up about one issue after another, and they didn't lend their voices, at least in a vehement fashion, to the degree that would have satisfied disenfranchised communities. That is no longer the case. We see, led by the likes of LeBron James, the Russell Westbrooks, the Malcolm Brogdons, the Jaylen Browns, the Trey Youngs, and so many others, not to leave out CP3, not to leave out Dwayne Wade, not to leave out Carmelo Anthony and various others from the time they were willing to address issues at the ESPYs years ago. That was long before George Floyd's murder, obviously. Clearly, there's a level of consciousness that's been elevated in the mind's eye of the modern-day professional athlete, and it transcends just basketball. It's all over the place. And here's why it's such a big deal as it pertains to that. When you look at basketball, you think about the guaranteed contracts. So you think about the insulation that they have available to them. Okay. But then you see NFL players, and we all lament the state of affairs as it pertains to NFL players, how the contracts are not fully guaranteed. It's really about your signing bonus, the power that the league owners have over the players, particularly during the collective bargaining negotiations and things of that nature. These are the kind of things that you've highlighted in the past, Max. But then you get baseball. They jump into the equation. You get individuals like Naomi Osaka in tennis that got involved. Mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. So when you look at the world of sports, people could sit up there and think they're punishing somebody, like we might not watch the NBA the way that we used to. We'll make sure we'll affect your ratings or whatever. But what you going to do with football? and what you're going to do with baseball, and what you're going to do with golf, and what you're going to do with tennis. The world has descended upon these issues and making sure to hold people accountable to address it, whether it's police reform or whatever you want to come up with. The NBA has partnered with various individuals and organizations, and that's something that we'll be talking about a little bit later on, where they're planning on trying to make change legislatively on Capitol Hill. These are the kind of things that are incredibly, incredibly important that are transpiring before our very eyes. So you're always going to have folks from the other side, meaning folks who feel differently, that are going to lament the state of affairs. Just give us sports. Shut up and play. Blah, 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 blah. But collectively, the world of sports has said, hell no, we are not listening, because we come from these communities. We don't just speak up for them and represent them. It's because we come from there. That is home to us. And we will not allow you to destroy them, because to destroy them is to destroy us. And by destroying, I mean squashing issues, shoving it by the wayside, and allowing things to fester and continue to go on, where insidious behavior, unlawful behavior, criminal behavior ends up taking place. We're not going to stand idly by and allow that to happen anymore. And the sports world has been at the forefront to making sure those issues are addressed. And I completely support them, and I stand with them.
What have we learned, right? The same thing that history continually teaches, which is stand up for justice, whether or not it's popular. Because when you do, history will smile on you. History will smile on you when you stand up for the right thing. Or maybe kneel for the right thing, right? Yeah. Like Colin Kaepernick. And my mind goes to Colin Kaepernick with George Floyd. They're linked. Mm-hmm. You know, African-American athletes led on this after George Floyd in the sports world. And I think the message really was, as a lot of, at least white America, but a lot of America was like, let's get back to normal. The idea is, wait a minute. We need a new normal, because the old normal's not working. Now, the reason I bring up Kaepernick is because his specific protest was he didn't feel like he could stand up and sing the national anthem when we weren't living up to our ideals, mm-hmm. when one group of people was treated another. In the case of Kaepernick, he was specific about it. Law enforcement interactions with communities of color. And I think a lot of white America at the time was thinking, because it's not visceral for them, because they don't experience it, was thinking, come on, things are good. Let's get back to, I don't want my football touched. But what George Floyd said, what did against the backdrop of the pandemic, was bring it in a visceral way into people's living rooms. You can't not see it. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. And it reminds me, as much as we compare Colin Kaepernick to Muhammad Ali, because Ali also sacrificed a big chunk of his career when he opposed the Vietnam War. And a lot of people bristle, well, Kaepernick's no Ali. It doesn't have to be an exact equivalence. But there are real similarities. Stephen A., when Muhammad Ali opposed Vietnam originally, it was not an unpopular war, because the American people were being lied to. It was sanitized on television, and people were being lied. And then the Tet Offensive happened, the end of the 60s, and it was in people's living rooms, and they could see it. And they had a different response to it. Then it got unpopular, and Ali was vindicated. And I feel there's a real similarity there with Kaepernick as it relates to George Floyd. When people saw George Floyd murdered in cold blood, I think a lot of America that was, I mean, black America understands this, right? White America saw it and thought, and couldn't unsee it, and said, oh, okay. I see now, not everybody, but there was a percentage of the population that I see now what Kaepernick was talking about. And there was a sea change. Suddenly, the NFL came out and said, we were wrong. The way we handled Kaepernick, we were wrong. Now, he's still not in the NFL. But when here on the first anniversary of George Floyd's murder, that's where my thoughts go.
My thoughts don't go there because he's still alive. And he's making money in various other ventures. And I'm not trying to dismiss what you're saying, but George Floyd doesn't get to go home to his family anymore.
Yeah.
George Floyd doesn't have a wonderful woman to go home to. George Floyd is gone. George Floyd was murdered in front of us. This officer laid his knee on this man's neck for over 9 minutes, right in front of our faces, with people in the streets with their cameras off, begging him to get his knee off and let him breathe. And he wouldn't do it. That's a very palpable, very visible, very tangible thing that we can point to. And then when you take into account, there are three other officers that go on trial starting August. I haven't forgotten about them one bit. Because if I remember correctly, two of them were laying on the legs. One of them was the one in front of the crowd, keeping the crowd at bay. So to some degree, although they couldn't be specifically charged directly with murder, they were complicit in my mind. And I certainly am interested in seeing how that trial goes. I'm also interested in seeing police reform. Now, am I an advocate for defunding the police? Hell no. I get in trouble, I'm calling 911. I don't believe that. And not only that, I've got family members that are police officers. Obviously, you see, there ain't just white police officers. There's black police officers. Look at the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore. Yep. There's black police officers. There's Latino police officers, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not down with that at all. But I do think that reform is necessary. I do think that when you consider the NBA players, NFL players, the kind of cachet professional athletes have overall, my attitude is this. When you see lobbyists, how many times do we hear that politicians take positions because lobbyists have them in their pockets? Well, guess what? Those lobbyists have money. Well, guess what? These leagues have money. So if you use that cachet and you march up on Capitol Hill, and it ain't just you as black athletes, but guess what? You got commissioners like Roger Goodell and Adam Silver. You got owners like Mark Cuban and Joe Lacob, or God forbid, Jerry Jones decided to get involved, the Daniel Snyders of the world, the Stephen Rosses of the world, and others. If you've got just a mosaic of individuals associated with the world of sports, using their muscle and their cachet with a fervent, a willingness to march up in Capitol Hill and push for legislative change, to me, it's possible that more positive things could happen. I think that's where their mindset appears to be, and that's what I'm happy about most of all.
Just to extend the comparison between Kaepernick and Ali and sure. The political times, and I mentioned George Floyd being maybe a flashpoint, the way the Tet Offensive in the Vietnam War was beamed into people's living rooms. There was also, during the Vietnam War, a divisive president who gained politically, he felt at least, from prolonging the war in Richard Nixon. And it was under another regime that things got back to normal. And not that Muhammad Ali, you know, caused that or the moment of the Tet Offensive, but it was part of the culture that changed people's minds. Because when you change the way people think and feel, that's how you change things. And I think Kaepernick, the reason I link him to George Floyd is because that's what he was protesting. And George Floyd, I think, changed the way some people at least think and feel. And then we got broader political change. And that was the backdrop of the Vietnam War. This was the backdrop of a pandemic.
Yeah.
We came out of Vietnam. We're coming out of the pandemic. And I just see a lot of parallels there.
Of course. But the world was sitting still and having that visual.
The countercultural revolution of the 60s and the early 70s was, there were athletes, it wasn't led by athletes, but there were athletes in leadership positions and they made real contributions. And I think the same was true over the last several years among athletes, African-American athletes, especially today.
Yeah, I'll leave the history to you and speaking to the culture for you. I'll leave the heartstrings to myself. You're both girl dads. I'm a total daddy's girl, the youngest girl in my family. And I'm thinking of his daughter Gianna today and all his loved ones. And I'm so sorry. I can never say justice is served when she's robbed of her time with him. But it is progress with the Chauvin conviction. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Time for quick takes. Max Kellerman, are you confident in a Curry extension?
Extremely confident.
Yeah, better
be. This dude is an icon there. He's in Silicon Valley. Why would he want to go anywhere else? They put winners around him almost every year. He's still close to the height of his powers. They're going to pay him. Well, Steph Curry ain't going nowhere.
His wife's got restaurants for sure. Stephen A., is it time to panic for those Clippers if they lose?
Hell yes. Ooh. I mean, when you look at Tim Hardaway, the way he played, Dorian Finney-Smith hit 4 or 5 threes, dropped 18 points. Jalen Brunson, let's give him some love. Being steady as your backup point guard, coming off the bench, doing what he's been doing. And Kristaps Porzingis shot 4 for 13. They still won this game because Luka keeps giving it to them. 31, 11, and 10. Hell yeah, it would be time to panic.
Max?
Yeah.
Is this the best version of LeBron at 36 years old?
Hell no. The best version of LeBron was in Miami. It's just like Jordan. People are like, oh, the second three-peat, he was even more mature. Shut up. Jordan in the first three-peat was the most vicious force of nature that ever lived. LeBron James in Miami, when they went back-to-back, was the best he ever played. He played 82 games or whatever it was, however many games, close to a full season, both ends of the floor as well as they could possibly be played. That was the best LeBron.
Tell me how you really feel, Max. About last night, Big Perk joining the convo. And, hey, Perk, I'm so happy to see you back in your home finally, that beautiful Mediterranean mansion with the greenery behind you. I know you were dealing with a lot down there in Houston in the ice storm. Now, it's good to see you back home.
I appreciate it, Molly. Hey, good to see you this morning. I see we got a little cute segment going on, cute day. Twins dressing alike, Stephen A. and Max.
Bopsy twins.
It's cute, the Bopsy twin.
I got appointments this afternoon. I ain't gonna front. If I knew Max was wearing that damn suit, I would have made sure to come here with something different. But then again, I realize that there's no way in hell I could ever look like Max Kellerman. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I'm not sure that's a great thing. Because Max is a good looking dude. I give it to him.
Handsome man.
All right, are we done? Are we done? Everybody's done complimenting themselves? Okay, cool. Let's move on. Let's get to the Joker and Dame time. Battle buckets galore. Despite a 42-point performance by Damian Lillard, the Denver Nuggets even the series last night with a dominant 19-point win over Portland. Jokic continuing to look MVP caliber in the playoffs, putting up 38. Here he is on Bouncing Back.
If you're going to talk about it, you're not going to do it. You just need to do it, you know. So probably you have seen the dog who barks doesn't bite. So I mean, we just need to go out there and fight, you know. So that was the feeling on the court, you know. We never gave up. I mean, even when Dame had a really get going, we stayed together, and we were just fighting through, you know. So and we won the game.
It's the real deal. 1-1 as the series shifts to Portland. Stephen A., can Lillard carry the Blazers past the Nuggets?
I think he can in the 7-game series. I think he's that explosive. He put on the show in that second quarter last night, had 32 points in the first half. Lillard is something special. Mm-hmm. Make no mistake about it. Me personally, I still think they got enough, but the only reason I feel they have enough to beat Denver is by default because Jamal Murray was there. If Jamal Murray was there, because he's not there, if he were there, healthy to play, Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets would take the Portland Trailblazers out in 6 games. So it's by default that I feel this way. Now, obviously, I've been on the record, and I've said religiously, if I'm the Portland Trailblazers, I have to consider moving one of the two because C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard together, as explosive as they are, as marksman-like as they are, I think they're a bit undersized together, and I think both of them have such extreme value that I would look to move one of them to get something else. But I'm going to tell you this. I got question marks about the coach, Terry Stotts, because He's a good, he knows the game. He knows his X and the O's, but in this day and age, everybody knows what the hell other people are going to do. It really comes down to your ability to galvanize the troops and maximize the potential that you have available to you on your roster. I'm not sure Terry Stotts is that guy. That's a question mark for me. And the biggest reason I feel that way is because of that damn Yusuf Nurkic. He gets on my damn nerve, Max. I can't hold it in no more. He really gets on my damn nerves. And I'm going to tell you why. Yusuf Nurkic can play.
Yeah.
This brother is not a scrub. He can play.
Yeah.
He can really, really play offensively. 7 points while Jokic dropping 38 on you, 34 in game one, 38 in game two. You shooting, what is it, 2 or 8 from the field. Where the hell are you? Where are you at? You're 6'11", 280, 290. And I understand that the Joker can play, but what the hell about you, Nurkic? He really gets on my damn nerves because he's too talented to play so weak sometimes. He can drop 30 anytime he wants to. He'll drop 25 or 30 a night and then disappear for 3 games.
For a team like Portland, a guy like Nurkic is actually the key.
He makes me sick. He really does because he's so talented and has wasted talent half the time with him. He just, for no reason, he just doesn't show up.
For a team that's not a free agent destination, your third best player's got to step up. And on paper, he always looks like maybe that could be the guy. It's not
talent-wise,
quite.
Max, he's one of the best big men in the game. Look, you just don't see it half the time because he want to take time off.
I agree with you. I mean, if the Nuggets had Jamal Murray, who don't forget was doing things like dropping as Perk would say, a 50 piece with no turnovers in last year's playoffs. It's insane. They might win the whole thing. Like, certainly get out of the West. That Aaron Gordon trade worked out lovely for them. But I'll say this, what impressed me so much about Jokic is they didn't seem to miss a beat without Jamal Murray, at least in the regular season. And I'm not saying this with my chest out. Denver's going to beat them. I think this is a long, drawn-out series. I think it's going 7. But I do think Denver's going to win. And usually, like, the team with the superstar who's going to have the ball in his hand, initiate the offense, has the advantage. That would be Lillard with Portland. But Jokic also always has the ball in his hand and can initiate your offense and is a brilliant passer, not to mention can score down low or from the outside, and he can do everything offensively. So I think actually with Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon, he has enough to squeak by the Blazers in a 7-game series.
Mm. Well, Stephen A., before I dive into my point, Max and Stephen A., I want to say this. What you said about Terry Stotts is right on. And I think when you look at Nurkic, it goes hand in hand because you have to watch the position that he puts him in. He got some playing around the three-point line doing dribble handoffs and popping and stretching the floor instead of establishing his 7-foot, 285 behind in the paint. So that goes on Terry Stotts. But here it is today, right? I'm not giving out free game. I'm going to send y'all my Cash App later. I'm going to just give y'all this game. And y'all. Okay, the Portland Trail Blazers are going to win the series. Here's why. One, they went into Denver and did what they were supposed to do, and that's take home court advantage. They got game one. That's what you want to do as a team on the road. You want to get two, but if you get one, good thing for you because now you're going home in front of your fans. Two, we all know stars are going to be stars, okay? Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Jokic, they're going to get theirs. They're going to put up big numbers because that's what they do. But the thing is that this is not the bubble anymore. So now you have to travel on the road, and now you get the chance to have home games. So now Portland is going back home. And what happens when you go home? The same thing we witnessed last night. Role players play better at home. We witnessed Aaron Gordon play better last night at home. We witnessed Jamichael Green play better at home. The role players for Portland are going to be better in Portland. So Portland right now has the upper hand. I had this series going 7. Portland in 7, But I believe that it's going six. Portland will finish this in six because they got game one, and the role players will step their game up when they get back to Portland. And I just don't see Denver having enough to beat them in either one of those games, three or four, in Portland. And they're going to be heading back to Denver up 3-1.
I can't dismiss that. I think it's possible that they can win it in six because they can just protect their home turf the rest of the way. But I lean on game seven because you're asking me to trust that Portland's going to be disciplined and focused enough to maintain home court advantage. And that's where Nurkic comes in and Stotts comes in. Whatever adjustments are going to be made, I haven't seen Stotts try to make them too often in his coaching career. I'm looking at Nurkic and I'm saying the talent that you have available. Again, Max, I understand you ain't Jokic. But damn, 34 and 38 points he gives to you, and you have such a tepid response. Come on, you got to do better than that. Give him something. You know that Lillard and CJ McCollum gonna give you what they supposed to give you offensively. Defensively, they're somewhat compromised because they're undersized. So one or the other is gonna get exploited from time to time. But that's where the big boys are supposed to come in and make up for that, which he almost never does. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. That's why I got it in seven. I could see Portland losing either game three or four, Kendrick, and then winning, okay, a game six, winning a game seven back in Denver.
It is a shame they don't have Jamal Murray. I would have loved to see what this team could do with Jamal Murray after the Aaron Gordon trade in these playoffs.
Yeah. I just want CJ and Damian want them with somebody tenacious on the front line, and whether defensively or
really
offensively, somebody that's a rough rider, man. Somebody that's trying to look as pretty as they do, shooting the damn basketball.
Memphis got to do it. I mean, there's some guys like that around.
Miley, Max, Stephen A., to your point, and you're right, right? Think about this. Nurkic, where's your fight? All right? You got to remember, they traded you away from Denver for Jokic. You're supposed to have a chip on your shoulder. You're supposed to come in there and show
good
them
point
that they made a mistake. So I agree to that point.